and 2000 UTC.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, November 17, 2023. Sudanese refugees at Gorom settlement camp in Juba say they face many challenges.
The life here is very difficult because we are refugees, we are suffering from the lack of food.
And the Speaker of South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly tells lawmakers from the East African community to support President Salva Kiir.
We are kindly requesting the bill of speakers to overwhelmingly support and give South Sudan support. This is an opportunity for South Sudan to show its potential.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Fighting in Sudan rages on 7 months after conflict erupted between the Sudan Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group in mid-April. Regional and international efforts to mediate the crisis have done very little, while human rights abuses by both sides have gone unpunished, making this a potentially protracted conflict. Analysts tell VOA's Nairobi Biro Mariama Diallo in this report.
7 months have passed since the war in Sudan broke out, and there is no end in sight. Mohamed Osman, a researcher for Human Rights Watch who covers Sudan, says there are many reasons this war may go on even longer.
The culmination of regional and international failure in their engagement in Sudan, on one hand, but equally on the other hand, it speaks volume to the two generals, the Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo Hemeti, and the way they are waging the war with significant civilian harm. It's unfortunately something we may continue to see if these generals are not feeling or fearing any set of consequences.
As a humanitarian crisis in the country worsens and ethnic violence escalates in the western region of Darfur, a senior United Nations official warned last Friday that violence against civilians in Sudan is verging on pure evil. Attempts in April to mediate between the two generals, once allies, now bitter enemies, were largely unsuccessful. U.S. and Saudi Arabian-led ceasefire talks in Jeddah were suspended in June, resumed last month, but adjourned again with no ceasefire. The warring parties did, however, commit to facilitating humanitarian aid and implementing trust-building measures, according to a joint statement by Saudi Arabia, the U.S., and IGAD, the regional East African bloc representing the African Union. With no mechanism to punish or prevent atrocities, it's hard to see anything positive coming out of any talks, Osman said. And there is more.
If we are looking at the constellation of the Jeddah process in particular, I mean, two things stand out. One is the stirring lack of civilian representation, including from civil society groups, you know, the protest groups and other key actors and key voices. And then the second thing is, we are not really seeing civilian protection and accountability issue being present at any stage so far.
On Tuesday, Doctors Without Borders, better known by its French acronym MSF, sounded the alarm on a Sudanese army ban they say is preventing life-saving surgical supplies from being transported in areas of Khartoum controlled by RSF soldiers. Claire Nicolet, MSF's Deputy Manager of Emergencies for Sudan, explains the reason that were given, justifying the ban.
It was a bit unclear, but then it was kind of clarified that the idea is not for us not to treat soldiers, RSF soldiers, inside these hospitals. Problem being that most of our patients are not even fighters, and the problem being as well that a fighter who is wounded is not anymore a fighter anyway by humanitarian law.
According to MSF, on September 10th, when Goro Market in Khartoum was bombed, 43 people were killed, while 60 wounded people were treated at Bashir Teaching Hospital, including women and children. However, MSF had to stop providing surgery in that facility in October because of the ban, Nicolette told VOA. Another facility known as the Turkish Hospital is now one of the only facilities in southern Khartoum with a fully functioning operating room. But there are not enough supplies left in the hospital to last for even a month, MSF says.
For Khartoum, fighting is ongoing. Our team are still managing to work, even though, honestly, it starts to be more and more complicated because of the lack of supply and the lack of possibility to moving in and out our teams at the moment. So we are receiving lots of wounded, lots of women for cesarean section delivering as well, lots of patients, pediatric patients or children.
In addition, Nicolette says there are other issues in other parts of the country.
Even in Wad Madani, there is a cholera outbreak at the moment. So already the team is busy there with this. Also, the city received like four times the population they used to have because of people going out of Khartoum. Prices on the market are completely crazy. So even for surviving, it's almost difficult for everyone living in Sudan at the moment.
During a recent visit to Kenya, Sudanese Army General Al-Burhan held talks with Kenyan President William Ruto, whom he had rejected as a lead mediator from the IGAD bloc earlier in the conflict. Together, they agreed to work towards a framework for ending the war, including finding ways to accelerate the Jeddah process towards a cessation of hostilities in Sudan. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Still on Sudan, some residents of Darfur who have been struggling with the effects of Sudan's conflict that is entering its seventh month say most of their families fled from Sudan to South Sudan to seek refuge at Goram refugee camp in the outskirts of the South Sudan's capital, Juba, where thousands of refugees are facing several challenges. I visited the camp earlier this month and spoke to Tijani Saleh Bashir about some of the challenges facing refugees.
The life here is very difficult because we are refugees. We are suffering from the lack of food because the transfer value of the money.
How much are you paid? I mean,
only 11.9. South Sudan pound. So that value is not enough for months. I mean, this value they give us per month.
Apart from the issue of the money, what other issues are there?
We're suffering from the problem of water. Here in Gorom, there is not enough water for the refugee. Even that which is now existing, also it is salt water. I mean, especially it is very hard for the people who are suffering from the stomach disease. So here only what exists is salty water. Even only we have about three or four boreholes. And our number, I mean the number of all the refugees, about 13,000. So this number is very huge, and the number of boreholes which are here is not enough for the people. So I require from the NGOs organization or the government of the South Sudan to find the other resource of the water. Besides that, also we are suffering from the health problem. We are only here, hospital, a small hospital. We can name it a health center. It is not a hospital. The medicines is not available. Sometimes if you become ill and you go there, you find you don't find the treatment, and you will be referred to Juba. Also, you will suffering from the same problem because the procedure of how to refer to Juba is very difficult, and even they refer you to the Juba. So as to get treatment is very difficult because sometimes you don't find the doctors. Sometimes you don't find the kind of treatment which you need exactly. I mean, investigation of your problem or your illness. In addition to that, we also have problem of shelters. You have to complete your procedure of registration. So after you complete the procedure of registration, so as to get the shelter, it takes a long time. We don't know where the reason. what the problem exactly. But some people may have 3 months or 2 months. Me myself, I have been registered from since. I mean, 10th of June, but until now I don't have shelter. I live with my friend, I live with my people, I know them. So this is a big problem. In addition to that also, when you get shelter, that material which you used, they used to build your home, is very poor because it is not resist the environmental factors like rain and heavy storm, all this, it will be, destroyed by simple thing. So we require the regularization so as to try to bring the material which is high quality. That is the problem of shelters. In addition to that, also we have a problem of education. Our children and our people and the students, until now they didn't get the education. We have only here, and we have come and found it. There is only one school here, and the number of students, according to their assessment, more than 3,000 students, and we have only one school, and even it is for nursery and primary school. There is no secondary school. There is no university. All the people who have above primary school, they are sitting nursing. So this is our problem of education.
That's Tijani Saleh Bashir, a Sudanese refugee, speaking to me at Gorum Settlement on the outskirts of South Sudan's capital, Juba. We'll bring more voices from the refugees in our programming next week. The Speaker of South Sudan's National Assembly is urging members of the East African community to support South Sudan and President Salva Kiir as he assumes the leadership of the regional bloc later this month. Nunu Jema Kumba made the remarks in Juba during the 16th conference of the speakers of the East African community. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Jema Nunu Kumba, who doubles as the chairperson of EAC Speaker's Bureau, called on national parliament in the regional bloc to work towards achieving the goals of the regional bloc.
The South Sudan gears up to ascend to the mantle of chairmanship of the community at a summit to be held in Arusha from 23-24 of November. We are kindly requesting the Bureau from speakers to overwhelmingly support and give South Sudan support. This is an opportunity for South Sudan to show its potential, despite some of the challenges the community is facing.
Kumba says South Sudan has made tremendous improvement in its commitment and engagement in East African community affairs. Last week, the South Sudan paid $7 million to the regional bloc in arrears and annual fees for the 2023-2024 financial year. Kumba says, as a sign of the country's commitment to the regional bloc, South Sudan has also contributed over 700 soldiers to the East African Security Mission to the Democratic Republic of Congo. The Speaker of Kenyan National Assembly, Moses Wetangula, says his country wants stability in South Sudan.
We support you and we want to see a peaceful Republic of South Sudan, because peace in the Republic of South Sudan is peace in the East African region, is peace on the continent. We all believe in the unity of our region. We all believe in the hope for prosperity in our region.
Nkurunziza Fabrice, Deputy Speaker of Burundi National Assembly, says members of the regional bloc should avail opportunities for discussing issues affecting the region.
We would like to assure you that every time we travel to one or the East African community, we feel at home. Furthermore, effective, high-quality integration requires regular exchanges of visits and the creation of opportunities such as these to discuss issues of common interest.
A Tanzania lawmaker says East African countries should build strong, resilient community. Tarimba Abbas says hopes the meeting address issues preventing development in the regional bloc.
Let us reaffirm our commitment to fostering cooperation, understanding, and growth among our member states. Together, we can build a stronger, more resilient East Africa May this meeting be a catalyst for positive change, laying the foundation for a brighter future of our region. We strongly need one another to our commitment to a continued cooperation and assist one another wherever need be.
The 16th Conference of the East African Community Speakers Bureau drew together lawmakers and representatives from the 7th Regional Bloc. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, an activist says the UN arms embargo imposed on South Sudan allows for importation of what for arms. For peace implementation. Find out how after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. An activist who signed the revitalized peace agreement on behalf of civil society says the arms embargo imposed on South Sudan in 2018 allows the government to import weapons for the implementation of the peace agreement. Government spokesperson Michael Makwe repeatedly said the government graduated and deployed the necessary unified forces without guns because of the arms embargo. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
Information Minister and Government Spokesperson Michael Makwe told this program earlier this week that the Transitional Government of National Unity deployed the necessary unified forces without weapons due to the arms embargo imposed by the UN Security Council.
Because we have been demanding the lifting of arms embargo so that we deploy them with guns. Instead, the international community had been on our net and demanding that we deploy them. And we have been saying, how do we deploy forces without guns? And they said they ought to be deployed. And so we have done it. Now the international community will tell us as to what are these forces going to do without arms.
But Rajab Muhandis, a civil society activist and member of the Outlawed People's Coalition for Civil Action, says Section 5 of Security Council Resolution 2428 of 2018 allows the South Sudan government to import weapons for the purpose of implementing the peace agreement.
This also includes importation of other equipment or materials, including also expertise that may be required by the government of South Sudan to help in training, equipping, and deploying the forces to be effectively operational in delivering on their mandate.
Muhandis says all the government needs to do is to notify the UN Security Council about its intention to import weapons, specific quantities, the country of import, and who is going to use the weapons.
So once this information is provided to the Security Council Sanctions Committee, the Sanctions Committee would provide South Sudan the waiver to execute that request. And this does not only apply to South Sudan alone, it also applies to all other countries that intend to support the government of South Sudan by delivering assistance to the forces in various forms, in terms of material assistance or assistance in terms of expertise.
The 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement requires the parties to the deal to train, graduate, and deploy 83,000 unified forces to take charge of security during the transitional period until the country holds elections. Asked how the first battalion of the necessary unified forces deployed to Upper Nile State will provide security without weapons, Makwe says the government has done what is spelled out in the 2018 peace deal.
So you should not ask me. I expect you to ask those of the international community as to how do you expect the government, these forces to be deployed without arms, and you expect them to be in charge of the security in those places. This question should have been asked to those who passed the resolution against us.
The minister insisted that the arms embargo should be lifted to enable smooth implementation of the peace agreement.
I'm advising that the international community demand the UN Security Council to lift the arms embargo so that the peace agreement in South Sudan is implemented in letter and spirit. Any resolution, whatever, on the arms embargo amounts to obstruction of the implementation of the agreement.
Muhandi says he believes the South Sudan government is deliberately ignoring the waiver in the text of the Security Council resolution regarding the arms embargo on South Sudan.
And so what the government does is simply to blame the Security Council for the sanctions and demand, the arms embargo, and demands that this arms embargo should be entirely removed so that they are able to import weapons.
In May this year, the UN Security Council passed Resolution 2683, extending the sanctions regime imposed on South Sudan for 1 year, including assets freezes, travel bans, and an arms embargo. The resolution was passed by 10 votes in favor and 5 abstentions. For VOA News, I'm Charlton Doki in Juba.
Health officials in Maban County of Upper Nile State say up to 300 cases of measles were recorded in the area between June and November. A medical doctor at Doro Public Health Center says refugees arriving from Sudan's Blue Nile states are testing positive for measles. For VOA News Manyang, David Mayar reports from Maban.
Two cases of suspected measles are admitted in an isolated ward at Doro Primary Health Center. Speaking through a translator, a mother identified only as Maria says her 10-year-old daughter became sick last week. She says she walked for 4 days to the health center where her daughter was diagnosed. She tested positive and was admitted.
That the rashes, skin rashes appeared on the body and she began coughing and has a fever. It has 4 days, and area that they are living, there's a stream and it is full. There's no way that they can cross. They waited until it is okay, then they cross now.
Maria says none of her 5 children were immunized against diseases including measles. Oshongodok John, a medical doctor at Doro Health Center, says Maria's daughter is one of 2 new measles cases at the center.
The cases started early this year. That was around June. The cases kept increasing, and more actually are the refugees with a few numbers over the host community. Actually, cases rose up to a maximum of 300. That is for this facility, of which we had 1 mortality.
John says out of 10 samples sent to Juba, 9 tested positive for measles infections. He says the influx of Sudanese refugees could have caused the spread of measles in the area.
If you were to look at what we captured in the few months, we had almost 50% of them have not received immunization. And majority of these actually are coming from Sudan. We do screening for these new arrivals when they come. We screen them. We also identify the children. Once we identify those ones who need immunization, we immunize them immediately from there.
Angelina Nyigeu fled from Khartoum to Doro Transit Center in Maban. She says she lost 2 of her 6 children along the way. She says one got sick of measles when we were still in Khartoum in Omdurman. When we arrived in Medeni, one boy, the older one, died there in Medeni. He was 3 years, and the younger one, who was born last year, was 8 months, died in Reng. They told me it was measles. John says a non-profit called Relief International and UNICEF are supporting Doro Health Center to respond to the needs of the refugees. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Maban County, Upper Nile State.
And it's now time for us to read your comments. We received a lot of comments from some of you this week on some of the issues in this broadcast. We start with Parach Michael in Juba, who writes, "Hello, VOA. It's sad news for Joe Biden administration to announce that their support for humanitarian aid has come to an end. This is not the right time to make such a decision at this moment where the country is facing economic crisis." Thok Chuin Nyok Twai from Juba, South Sudan writes, "To me, it's a good move taken by President Kiir Mayardit and his deputy first vice president of South Sudan, Dr. Riek Machar, to reconstitute the three main issues in the 2018 peace agreement. But the new election leaders are not reconstituted in the way the 2018 peace deal wanted. I'm calling on both parties to chair all the positions equally without problems." Kwajok Kulang from Juba writes, "Hey, John Tanza, the government have no any concerns to their citizens because the situation in Juba is growing worse every day. The dollar rate has gone higher. Prices in the market are changing every day. When you ask, you hear of heavy taxation from the government." Emma from Rhino Camp in Uganda writes, "Good evening, VOA. I'm very glad with VOA South Sudan in Focus program. My regards to John Tanja," that's how he writes my name, "and all the listeners." Livia from Uganda writes, "Hello, John. Our government is not serious. How can they deploy the unified forces without guns? They really don't care about their citizens. Just listen to the way the Minister of Information was talking. He really does not care. These are not our leaders who can lead a country. Why can't God take all of them away?" These are not my words, but this is from Livia in Uganda. Antonio Magwek Machar from Marialo Payam writes, "Hello, VOA. Civilians here in the villages are armed more than soldiers. I wish our government could disarm the civilians and give those arms to the trained forces rather than buying from outside. This method reduces insecurity caused by unknown gunmen all over the country." Mading Malual Aluang in Juba writes, "The most interrogating question asked by many South Sudanese is, how are they going to protect civilians as they are mandated to protect South Sudanese without guns and ammunition? It is very shameful for a sovereign state to be unable to disarm the civilians that have been holding guns for two decades. Secondly, we the citizens are anxious of the soldiers because they are old people among the unified forces. Let the government feed the soldiers and allow competency and integration of the soldiers." Views expressed.
I'm James Roy Majok from United State, Bantu Town, South Sudan. I'm appealing to Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. He may accept ceasefire between Palestinian and Israel. I have watched a TV whereby many people are dying in Gaza, and I call upon the international community to intervene to bring the two countries to peace and harmony.
And thanks. That the voice note brings us to the end of this segment. I must say, views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of Voice of America. Keep your comments coming and we shall sample them. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. And that's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now leave you with JJ Muzika at the song Saida. Saida. We have been listening to JJD Muzika with the song Saida. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Peter Heinley, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Saida. Mama, when you're so hard.